Welcome along and Happy New Year. Now, show us some respect, as Sergio Ramos might shout. On the other hand, if we're consistently awful, then feel free to mention it. Everything should be fine at Sevilla now because they've got a new president, the son of the old guy who got sent to prison. They don't get on, and what Sevilla really needs is a succession-style family drama and some more old players. Barcelona have got a new player, and they've even registered him in the squad. Vitor Roque will score loads once he's adjusted to the smaller European goals. Yes, Barca went last in the match round, which was handy, given that they start matches with the enthusiasm of a teenager nearing the end of the Christmas holidays. And they needed the points, given that Girona are unstoppable, even for a fully firing Alvaro Morata. Classic Morata that he produced that performance while they were waving goodbye to the title race. Antonio Rudiger is not only Real Madrid's only central defender, he's also their centre forward. And the La Liga refs were back, armed with new Christmas whistles and cards. Mason Greenwood's appeal will be based on being from Manchester, and therefore telling someone to F off is a sign of endearment in a way. Welcome along to our new Patreons, Ben and Hanimats. Welcome along. I don't know if I mentioned Gareth. Gareth signed up over the holidays as well, so thank you very much. Happy New Year, Terry. I'm sorry about the sniffs and everything else. If I suddenly disappear off camera, it's because I'm sneezing. Right. So we're back. We're a round of La Liga games squeezed in, and then there are no La Liga games this weekend because of the Copa del Rey, and then we're into a disrupted bit because of the Super Cup. As long as it all makes perfect sense. Right, so where shall we start? So shall we start with Barcelona, actually?
Start with your cold, John. Bad news is I've had it for a month. Right, so,
honestly, wish you well. Yes. Fingers crossed it goes away. I'll try not to mention it because other people's colds are not very interesting, are they? Your own cold is always of great interest to you, but no one else is really interested. as long as you don't cough and sneeze on them. Las Palmas 1, Barcelona 2. So I'm going to give you a bit of reaction. Philip says, I'm starting to suspect that Xavi has had the team doing afternoon naps. The only explanation for these constant slow starts. Second half shows that we can play a little if we want to. So why is no interest in the first half? Darren puts a stat on it. He says that there's a stat doing the rounds that if every La Liga game finished at half-time this season, Barca would be in 14th. Yet no team has won more points than them in games from the 75th minute onwards. Is there an explanation? A lackadaisical attitude by the players when beginning games? Going behind 7 times in the league this season, the fault of Xavi for not setting them up right from the start. Surprising that he hasn't tried to go with the 4 midfielder model that gave them control in the middle of last season. Or is it team spirit? They are willing to fight and salvage things. Which is not a sustainable way to win the title, he points out. So yeah, so that is it's a bit of a theme, isn't it? So they came back, they were awful first half, weren't they? I don't think they no shot on target at all in the first half of the game, and then second half they picked up. There was much more fluid, or is fluent the word? And they nicked it at the end. It was a pen, wasn't it? It was a blatant foul, wasn't it? So it was fair enough that they won, but. Barely sustainable, is it, to play so badly in the first half of games?
Yeah, it's a really weird situation because I've been involved in teams that played when I was playing that did have a few games where you were slow to start. As a coach, it obviously happens as well, but for a pattern of pretty much the whole season is really unusual because it's something you can address as a coach, as a manager, and as a player. Your responsibility. And it's clear what they lack in the first half of games is they lack the urgency. It's almost like they need to go a goal behind before they liven up and play quicker, win the ball back quicker. All the stuff we associate with a good team, they fail to do. It's slow, methodical build-up. They're not really, there's no real desire to win the ball back and regain possession until they go a goal behind.
Yeah.
So that's something that Xavi has to be able to find a solution for. And it's quite straightforward, really. I mean, you heard the interview with Gundogan after the game saying, this is ridiculous, we keep making it tough for ourselves. And if you do go a goal ahead against Barcelona, you can make life difficult for them because they're not the best at the moment in terms of breaking teams down who defend deep and defending in numbers. So it is a problem and motivation has to be a factor. You know, the attitude has to be correct in the change room before the game. The players have to be fired up. You can't trust them to do that themselves. It has to come from the manager and the coaching staff. with regards to Philippe and the players taking on that, that's a given. They all do. It's it's when you're playing evening matches, it's a long day. I think it was Upper State kickoff last night. I think that's the same time in Gran Canaria as the UK. So I don't think it was a 9:30 kickoff. So it, but a taking a nap is the norm. I struggled when I was younger. I was too hyperactive as a 21, 22, 23-year-old to sleep in the afternoon before a game. But as it went on, as my career went on, you did realise the importance of maybe having an hour or so in the afternoon, because you were kicking off, you know, 8 o'clock at night or 7:45, finishing at, you know, approaching 10 o'clock. So that's a given. Eat and sleep on the day of a night match is normal. But I think the motivation has to come from the manager and the coaching staff and the leading players. It's not enough just to, you know, go into a game complacent. Complacency is obvious from Barcelona. It's they're being complacent far too often. And that stat where they would be 14th in the league tells everything about it. And at the moment, it's left them with a 7-point deficit, which at stages of the game last night, I thought it was going to be worse than that. And I was like you in the intro, getting prepared to write off Barcelona from the title race, same as Atletico Madrid. But they did nick the win. They were much better in the second half. It looked much, but they're scrambling, aren't they? I mean, Xavi's using all five subs. He's taking off Lewandowski. He's putting on an 18-year-old who's only been at the club for 3 or 4 days. And he's scrambling. He's having to try and find something to liven things up in the second half. And that shouldn't be the case. When you look at their starting 11, it should have been strong enough to, I'm not saying to roll over Las Palmas, because we'll talk about Real Madrid and Mallorca later as well. But it should be enough to start the game in the appropriate manner, with a sharpness and that, you know, desire to control a game of football with the level of player that Barcelona have got. And in the first half last night, it's dreary and dismal to watch, isn't it, Barcelona, when they play that slow and, you know, don't threaten the opposing goalkeeper at all.
Sloppy passing, isn't it? Where it's like two or three passes and the third one doesn't go exactly where it needs to go. So the guy has to slow down and, he can't fizz the ball on straight immediately. And the other one that strikes me as well is that the movement into the penalty area for much of the game, because they work it wide a lot, don't they? Then they get it in low, and there's often only Lewandowski there, and the opposition.
Sergio Roberto is the only one that got into the box.
Yeah,
the quality of crossing is poor. The quality that runs forward was poor because they got caught offside something like 14 times. There's a lot of things that they can improve on. I agree about Lewandowski. I mean, it's a talking point, and Xavi did have the courage to take him off.
Yeah.
When it was clear he didn't look like he was going to score the goal, and they needed a goal. But I do have a degree of sympathy in terms of the quality of the balls into the box. Too often they get in really good positions. Balde was the most guilty last night, and yet he's normally good. So it might have just been one of those nights. I wouldn't want to criticise him too much, but the offside trap that Las Palmas kept setting clearly encouraged Barcelona to play balls in behind. It was on all the time, but there's just the mistiming of the forward runs. And it gets quite annoying, actually, the VAR, doesn't it, now, with the offside.
Letting it go on. System.
Yeah.
When you think he's offside, mate, and we all know he's offside, put your flag on.
But in amongst those 14, there was a couple that I wasn't sure he was offside. Yeah. The linesman, the system referee, the lino, old school, was really sharp last night. And there was a couple where I thought, oh, I don't know if that's off. And then you'd sort of replay and you think, well, the lines would have had to have come out there and would have had to look at that closely. So the linesman was a bit sharp. But in general, it was poor runs from the Barcelona players. But then we have that 10 seconds of carried on play and then a shot on goal. And then it gets brought back and it was offside all along. So, but there's a lot to improve from Barcelona. They can do it. They have the quality of players to do it. They were hampered by the fact Cancelo come off because their attack was only down the left, couldn't they? Never went forward at all.
Players blow, isn't
not
it?
Playing well. Rafinha, not playing well.
Vitor Roque, he only came on, 79 or something he came on? Obviously, he missed an absolute sitter, didn't he? That was my cheeky reference to bigger goals in Brazil. What were the signs? I mean, it was a totally different game, wasn't it, towards the end when he was on?
Yeah, his enthusiasm, which is going to be a given, isn't it? It's your first game. You've only been there a few days. You've flown in from Brazil and you're playing and you're excited to be on the bench. You're excited to have the potential coming on. He did, and he showed that enthusiasm. He looks strong. He looks powerful. And to be honest, he livened things up. He isn't Lewandowski. It kind of gives you the impression that maybe the pair of them might be a good option. Because the system isn't really working that well for Barcelona at the moment.
Yeah.
So Ferran Torres got the first goal, so that makes it a little bit more complicated in getting Vitor Roque in as a centre forward. I hope they stick with him as a centre forward and don't think they can get away with playing him wide on the right or the left. But I liked his determination, his enthusiasm. He was unlucky in another opportunity as well. We had the clash with the goalkeeper. I even like the fact he slammed into the back of a defender for an 18-year-old kid. Showed that aggression, and which Barcelona sometimes do lack. But Lewandowski, I have sympathy for him. But he has got to help himself. I mean, his movement off the ball when the ball goes into the box. You said he doesn't get a lot of support, but his movement isn't great. And it's a weird one looking at Lewandowski because I've commentated him in the past for Poland, and he's been okay. He obviously was a spectacular player at Bayern Munich, and that's in Champions League as well. So it's not as if he was just a flat track bully in the Bundesliga. And then when he joined last year, I was part of me was thinking, right, what have you got in the locker? Let's see him on a weekly basis. I was excited to see him, and he didn't disappoint for half a season. But I have to say, since midway through last season and this season, it's been really disappointing to see a player of genuine quality playing as poorly as he is. When you compare it to that first half of last season, when he was scoring goals where they weren't even half chances, you know, the headers in the box, the turns and the swivels and the shots at goal and the skill to take out a couple of defenders and finish a chance, which wasn't even a half chance, that led you to believe, oh, this is what they've bought. You know, this is what we've always heard about, seen briefly in the Champions League and for Bayern Munich. He's brilliant. He hasn't been brilliant for a year now. So it's a problem for Barcelona in the fact that Xavi last night did have the courage to make the change when it was quite obvious. I'm compromised by that because Lewandowski didn't look like scoring, but if he sat on the bench, he's clearly not going to score. And you do feel as a manager sometimes, can't take him off because if he does get that chance, if we do create a chance for him, he will take it. So I don't think he'll be left out. I think Xavi will continue to play him. But it's almost like he needs a kick up the backside, though, to say, just because you're Lewandowski, this is Barcelona, and there is a level of performance that we expect for the money we paid and the money we pay you. And if you're not delivering, then you are going to be substituted. And ultimately, if you don't improve, you might be left out. So it's a dilemma for Barcelona. What appeared to be a fantastic signing appears to be a problem at the moment.
Girona, however, do not have problems, other than they've conceded three goals. sack them. So they beat Atletico 4-3, clearly the game of 2024. Might have had the best game of 2024 already, Terry. That might be...
Can't be beaten.
It's just a spectacular story, isn't it, Girona, at the moment? And then, you know, a 91st-minute winner. They kept going, kept attacking. The fact that it's been done, not by, grinding out results or doing any kind of, some kind of tactical innovation that no one's picked up on or anything like that.
Exactly.
Keep attacking. Keep attacking, playing excellent football, and then just keep on getting the results.
And with the level of goalkeeper, the level of defenders, to do that is really brave. And people have asked me, what are they like? What do they do? And with Leicester, when they won it, Leicester be a comparison maybe with Leicester.
Yeah.
Leicester were a defensive team that were brilliant on the counter-attack. They had hard-working midfielders. They had Jamie Vardy up front, who was the special ingredient that would score goal after goal after goal. And was a fantastic player, an option for Leicester. So it was obvious, it was easy to describe how Leicester were. But it's hard to describe what Girona are, to be honest. I mean, they start the season off with a 4-1-4-1 formation, and for no reason whatsoever, because they were winning every game, they changed to a 3 at the back, and that suited them, and they still continue to win. I find it really, really good. It's almost like an experiment that should lead to other teams like Girona in any league, not just La Liga, in that mental side of the game, the mental capacity. And as a player and as a coach, you do go into games where you think, you don't sit there and think, we've got no chance here today. But you do sit there and think, God, this is, you know, we're going to do well to get something. That's your approach going into a game. When you're playing for Coventry and you're going to Manchester United or Liverpool, you do sit there and you think, we're going to do well to get something out of this game. There's a little part of you thinking, hope we don't get hammered. And that's how Girona have turned that mentality around from being a team that starts the season with hope, aspirations of keeping out of the relegation fight. That would have been their aspiration. Maybe if we do well, we can push for Europe. To turn that mentality around to a team that goes into every game now, whether it's Barcelona away, Atletico Madrid at home, you know, they're winning games now and you think, oh, that would have been a shock if they'd lost that. But, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, it wouldn't have been.
Yeah, we were saying that about the Betis, dropping points against Betis, where we like it was exactly a terrible result. Yeah,
exactly. So how Michel and the players have done that without playing in a what you would call an atmospheric stadium. It's got a good little atmosphere, but it's, what was it, 13,000, 11,000 supporters in the stadium. It can be, as an ex-Wimbledon player, where we used to get 8,000 in a 10,000 stadium, it can be quite lively, a little bit of an advantage. Teams didn't like coming there, and they're probably not in love with the idea of going to Girona. It's a small stadium, but so that it's, I find it really interesting that I wonder if other teams are going to be able to emulate this in the future, where you don't have a glass ceiling where you start the season and think, well, we're not going to win the league. We're going to hope that we survive. To turning it around now, where week after week after week, they have the belief. And this is a group of players that, I mean, there might be one or two in amongst it, but I don't think there is, that have won an awful lot in the past.
As blind and for anything,
collective group mentality to be as it is that for me is the biggest achievement so far. The fact they're winning games and the top scorers in La Liga, but it's that mentality going into these games thinking, I mean, I'm Daily Blint has probably won stuff in the past.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't think of anyone else in that squad. The manager hasn't. The manager has, in all honesty, I mean, that's their problem. Keeping hold of Michel. He's been linked with other jobs. Newcastle, he was linked with the other day. And that's quite astonishing because in the past, his career hasn't been glittered with success.
Mm.
You know, good spells at Rayo and Huesca, but both ended up
in a
disastrous situation.
A popular manager, but not a sensational
go-to,
is he? Yeah.
And now he's leading a team that win every game.
Daily Blint has won 8 titles, Terry, in his. So it's not bad, is it? And that's despite playing for Manchester United as well.
So it's for me, that's the biggest thing, is the biggest achievement so far, is turning that mentality around from a group of players to now believing that they can win against away at Barcelona. They can win at home to Atletico despite conceding 3 goals. They had the courage of conviction the other night to go for the winner at, as opposed to Atleti when they settled for the 3-3. I'm totally bemused by that.
Mm.
And Girona got the reward.
Yeah, so are Atleti...
How would you describe them as a team? I don't see any obvious trait other than really fast, hard-working, great enthusiasm, more than enough quality to score the goals. Defensively, they look a little bit suspect at time, but I think that's because of the way that they play, because they do play 3 at the back. It's not 5. The wing-backs push on. The midfield players push on. There's a lot of responsibility on Alex Garcia to do a bit of everything in midfield. They've got players that score goals, lots of players that score goals, but it's hard to pin them down and say they're a team that dominate possession. They're a team that sit back and hit you on the counter-attack. They're just good to watch. The fundamentals are really good for Girona.
They play like they're a top team, don't they? Which feeds into what to what your point about the confidence, the approach to it. I'll have a look at the stats and see if they're their possession.
They start games as if they're 1-0 down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like they expect to win and like they should be going for the victory. So they are quite possessiony. They're 4th. Barca are top by a mile, 64. And then Real Madrid, 59. Las Palmas, 57.7. And Girona, 57.0. So that's quite high possession. So, yeah, they are that. Let's have a look at passes. See if they... Interesting sometimes to break it down, isn't it? So long passes attempted, where do they go? Lower mid-table in terms of long passes attempted. Completed medium passes. High completed short passes. Sixth. So, yeah, it's hard, isn't it? They're not top of any of those metrics.
Exactly.
So it's not
obvious. It's just a group of players playing with incredible belief now.
Yeah.
Confidence. And genuinely believing they can be party spoilers, you know, that they can win the title.
Are they going to keep everyone? That's the only thing that's going to do well. No, Real Madrid might derail them, obviously. But the other thing is, are they going to lose players, or can they?
Is there anyone that important? Because it is a squad. You look at the amount of players that have scored goals this year.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll lose anyone this season.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah.
I think, even if a bigger club came calling now, you're on the verge of something really historic and special.
Yeah.
It would massive decision. Alex Garcia would be the obvious one. You know, clubs are looking around for him. Barcelona are, but they haven't got the money. Is he going to go to Real Madrid? Probably not. Is he going to move to the Premier League? I think he could put that off until the end of the season, if that was the option. So I think they keep him.
Yeah.
Bobic and Stuani. I don't think anyone's going to be rushing at the moment to spend 50 million on Bobic, and certainly not Stuani because of his age. They've got Savio on loan.
So he could go. Does City own him? Man City own him?
City Group.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I think no. Because he's came from, is it Troyes on loan?
Right, okay, yeah, right. So I guess they'll be fine, won't they? I think they'll be fine for players, to keep them.
You wouldn't want to leave now, would you, if you was a player? Why leave in January when you can stay and have a similar move, back yourself, that you're going to continue that form, the team's going to continue the form. Worst case scenario now, Girona finish only in the top four.
Mm.
That's the worst case scenario. Yeah. And you leave and go in the summer for, when it's a better time for a player to move anyway, to a club that's willing to offer, a large sum of money. And that would suit your own as well. So
I need to ask you about Atleti. Right. Are they done? I mean, stuff I say in the intro, by the way, I don't hold, that's not the truth. So, but 10 points, I am sort of thinking.
When they lose that game, not officially, because it doesn't matter what I officially think, but I literally threw them under the bus in terms of winning the title. They're in a race with top four now. And I just still always come to the same conclusion. The quality of defenders are not good enough. And I always refer to the fact Witsel is a must play now.
Yeah.
And yet he joined the club as a midfield player and he's playing centre-back in every game that Atleti play. So they need to strengthen massively, in my opinion. Savage didn't get on the other night. I would still have him playing.
Yeah, just individual.
I don't know why Reinildo is. I'm not sure if he's injured or finding his way back, but I think he's one of their better defenders. So I just don't think the quality of defence is good enough for Atleti to sustain a title challenge, which is surprising because I was amongst a lot of people that tipped them at the start of the season, kind of overlooking the fact that they hadn't really strengthened. Sancho had come in, but we barely see him, and Simeone doesn't seem to have any faith in him. Chopping and changing with the wing backs now, I write them off. Fantastic hat trick for Morata. but they've got their work cut out now, Atleti, to finish top four because of Athletic Club.
Yeah. Right. Shall we just do Real Madrid? Undramatic. I mean, they got there in the end. This was nearly, massive points dropped, wasn't it, against Mallorca? Mm-hmm. They were made to work hard, and then Rudiger scores 78th minute. And, it was nearly very lackadaisical and points dropped, but they got away with it.
Yep. And Mallorca, it was good for the league, I think. I did the game for ITV, and we are Real Madrid Mallorca wasn't let's be honest, the reason we were doing it was because Jude Bellingham. And the last Real Madrid game that ITV did, he was missing through injury. So it was, you know, it was a chance, right, UK viewers to watch Jude Bellingham playing for Real Madrid. And I think most people, if they're a casual viewer, would tune into that and think, oh, this is going to be at least a 3 or 4 nil for Real Madrid. So it's good for the league that, you know, when people do casually tune in, they see a competitive Mallorca team. They are competitive Mallorca. I mean, they draw too many games. They've got some decent players. Manager knows what he's doing. They're well organised. They hit the woodwork twice, you know, so they did put Real Madrid under pressure sufficiently, more than I thought they would do in terms of attacking play. And Real Madrid just got the job done. There's two wins on the trot for Real Madrid from unlikely goal scorers from corners. Lucas Vasquez got the winner at Alaves. Rudiger gets the winner against Mallorca. It's the type of win you need to grind out when you've got players missing. You're not at your best. You know, and, you know, it came after the break, the Christmas break, where some teams do have a slight issue, you know, sometimes with getting themselves back up to speed again, depending on what type of holiday the players have had. So it was, we're not going to be talking about it as it cost him Real Madrid. Whereas if they'd drawn, if it had been a 0-0 and Rudiger hadn't scored, then we would be talking about that maybe at the end of the season. If they don't win the league, it might be one of those games we look back at, like Alaves, and think, well, they dropped points against Alaves. They didn't. They dropped points against Mallorca. They didn't. They managed to sneak the win. Tchouaméni wasn't tested at centre-backs. We didn't learn anything.
Yeah. Says he's not signing a centre-back. It seems a bit reckless, that, doesn't it?
I think so, because Rudiger and Nacho are the only two.
Yeah.
So you're if you don't sign one...
It's a lot of games.
Exactly. And there is a potential for Rudiger and Nacho to pick up an injury. I mean, there could be a potential for both of them.
Yeah.
And you're then left with Tchouaméni and a young player, or Tchouaméni and Camavinga.
Yeah.
Or Danny Carvajal.
Carvajal, he listed as his centre back options, but he's not, is he?
I think he could do it.
Yeah.
I do. I really do. I think we saw last year in the, or the year before in the Champions League, when that silly run, and they were chucking forwards on left, right and centre. Often in those matches, Danny Carvajal, I think in City when they came back and that dramatic win at the Bernabeu, I think it was Danny Carvajal and Jesus Viaco at centre-back. Because that's when you're looking and thinking, my God, what sort of team is this? So Carvajal is strong enough, aggressive enough to play centre-back. Maybe it might be an issue if he's playing against Marici, if he would have been playing, or even Cole Larin, in terms of a height advantage, anti-Budimir, you know, one or two of those players. But he knows what he's doing, Danny Carvajal. So in emergency, but you wouldn't want that in a Champions League quarterfinal, semi-final, to be playing one of the other big clubs in Europe and having a centre-back pairing of Tchouaméni and Danny Carvajal. So I think numbers-wise, they probably do need to do something. And there are players around that would be willing to go to Real Madrid, because if you went there as third-choice centre-back with 19 league games to go and the Champions League to go, you're talking about, you know, pushing 30 matches, you might go there for half a season on loan and play in 10 of them. So I think that they could entice people to go there as a backup, understudy, a number, a body, who is a genuine centre-back. So I think personally they should do, because in terms of numbers.
Yeah. Sevilla 0, Athletic 2.
Sorry, John.
Go on.
Please, we're doing a podcast. Please respect it. Hey, please, we're broadcasters. Please respect it. Sorry, John, the things we have to put up with here.
that was serious acting skills, everyone. It was good, wasn't it? I like it.
And he had a twinkle in his eye afterwards as well, where you're thinking he was aggressive, he was forthright, and then he smiled at the end of it.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what was happening before. I've seen stills of the group of people that were watching the interview. There must have been one person giving him stick, because the rest of them all look completely dumbfounded that Sergio Ramos has given him a bollocking after his team had just lost 2-0. It's kind of sad to see from Seville's point of view, and it's sad to see from Sergio Ramos. And I do look now and think, no wonder some of these players clear off and go to America and play somewhere else in the twilight of their career, rather than what Ramos has done. He probably didn't expect it. He didn't expect this to be an onslaught of depression and misery and defeat after defeat for Sevilla, particularly in their own stadium. They were awful last night. They all huff and puff. And if they were still there now, they still wouldn't score a goal. And I can't work out a solution. They've got good players. The supporters are still behind them till the final whistle.
There weren't many there, though.
Manager. No, and it was rain. Mind you, when it was raining in that stadium, everybody moves to the back because there's no shelter.
Honestly, put a roof on a stadium. It's certainly a long-term issue.
A little bit of a roof would help. I mean, even in the sun.
Yeah.
You see people sitting there, they've got newspapers on their heads because it's burning. They're waving fans. Put a little bit of a... Come on, they've come far enough in recent years. In the last 20 years to have started putting the roof on the stadium.
Where the money has gone from that club, the things that they've won in recent seasons, the transfer deals that they did, and
oh, the
made
profits
money out of
they've
them.
Made. Mm. It's to not have a roof on there is so when it rains, it all
it honestly looked like the most miserable place in the world.
Exactly.
Say.
And it probably is at the moment. It probably isn't far away from being that. In one of the most joyous cities in the world. They're dragging Sevilla, dragging the supporters, you know, the levels of
and
mood.
Then shout at them at the end of the game.
And then get shouted at by Sergio Ramos. It's where's this going to end with Sevilla?
Well, there is a new president who's in charge. So maybe, but he's the son. So he's called Jose Maria del Nido Carrasco because his dad was Jose Maria del Nido. Who, as I said at the beginning, he genuinely went to prison, didn't he? He was involved. He was a lawyer or accountant, wasn't he? And it was false accounting. And he was involved with Jesus Heal and that lot, wasn't he? So
that lot,
So I don't know. It doesn't exactly thrill me, but maybe hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully he's a young guy. He's not his dad, is he? So. That there will be some new way to look at everything, but at the moment it's looking grim, isn't it? First of it, and we should give Athletic, which we have many times this season, they are a terrific team at the moment.
The difference between the two teams last night was huge. You contrast the mood and lack of confidence, lack of ideas from Sevilla to a team with a plan, with good players, with confidence, with a manager who's clearly got everything under control. 2-0 didn't flatter them. 4-0 would probably have been a fairer scoreline in this match. They dealt with anything Sevilla threw at them and literally threw at them. That's all Sevilla did. They get the ball wide, cross it from deep. Athletic Club dealt with that far, really comfortably. And they look excellent going forward. Pace, skill, efficiency. They're a super team. And I've said from day one, I got it completely wrong about Atletico, but I genuinely thought Athletic Club would have a good season this year. I think they're a really good team. They've got an excellent manager. Disappointed in the first game of the season when they lost to Real Madrid at home. That worried me. And then since then, they've been fine. They're really good. And they have every chance of a top four finish.
Yeah. excuse me. One second. We're going to cough and then put a point to you. Right, from Christian, who says, hope you had a good break. Just watched Sevilla Athletic. Sevilla players suffering from paralysis analysis. Or the other way around, is it? Analysis paralysis. Trying hard not to make a mistake. When something goes wrong, the fans turn against them. It's a toxic environment. Players are afraid of playing the correct way to avoid defeat. Players are too good to be in the position that they are at the moment. But that feeds into that environment thing, doesn't it? That you start... You can't play as a footballer and start worrying.
Oh, fear. You play with a fear.
Yeah.
Honestly, the difference between playing with fear and playing with confidence like Girona is incredible. I mean, as an individual, as a collective, if you're playing with fear, which Sevilla are as a collective playing with fear, nobody is stepping forward and stepping up and playing with any leadership qualities because it's just infectious. You know, having confidence can be infectious. Having no confidence is infectious. It's a real problem. And what we're looking at now is Sevilla and Villarreal to a degree. Villarreal slightly better off, but two really surprising. Sevilla are doing worse than they did last year under Sampaoli. And you're looking at this, their third manager of the season. Yeah. Is there any sign that Kike Sanchez Flores can turn it round? I haven't seen a massive change from him that was in terms of style of play.
Reluctance about sacking Diego Alonso is that it's just reactive all the time, isn't it? And so, and then you don't have the reactive card to play the next time. And there's a lot.
There's no definitive to say that Kike Sanchez Flores is going to get longer than Diego Alonso.
Yeah.
there going to be another manager at Sevilla? Mm. It hasn't started off great for Kike Sanchez Flores. What happens next if over the next 6-7 games Sevilla don't get any wins, draw a few, get beat, still hanging around the bottom of the table? Then what is there? Yeah. Would there be any justification for saying, well, no, we're going to stick with this manager? There probably isn't, to be honest.
No, other
than he's got to change
for the
tactics.
Very sake of doing so, because there is a case for literally sticking with the guy,
yeah,
because the changes are actually harmful.
I'm not suggesting they should.
Yeah.
I'm saying, what justification would there be saying, well, he's done as bad as Diego Alonso.
Yeah.
So, but we're going to keep this one.
Yeah.
Because we can't be asked to go and look for another one and find the right one.
Yeah.
So do we stick with this one and hope?
I said this when we were talking about whether they'd sack Diego Alonso. Why not Mendilibar? If you're appointing a coach now, you'd appoint a Mendilibar.
Exactly. It wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world to me he's back.
Yeah.
At some stage.
Yeah.
Mendilibar. I'm not predicting it's going to happen, but who can predict anything that's going to happen at Sevilla?
Yeah.
It's a real basket case at the moment, and such a shame to see. It really is. We need Sevilla to be at their best. We need them to be in the top six, top eight, challenging for the Champions League, doing well in Europe. It enhances the league, but at the moment, they're miserable to watch, to be honest. There needs to be, I want to see a definitive change from Kike Sanchez Flores. What I see is the same as what we saw under Diego Alonso, what we saw under Mendilibar. I want to see something completely different. I mean, he playing three at the back in parts of the game, that I can see that. But I do want to see it. All I see is the same.
Yeah.
Ball going wide, crosses into the box, not enough players in the box, not winning knockdowns in midfield. They're not playing out the back into midfield and then into the front. There's no pattern emerging from what's happening under the latest manager.
Because of a pitch invasion in 2017, Getafe played against Rayo Vallecano at the Metropolitano.
7 years after the offence.
That doesn't make any sense at all, does it?
I can't work out why there was a loophole which was meant to be played behind closed doors, but then there was a loophole where they could play in another stadium.
Yeah.
So this is why it was played at Letty's ground. But 7 years, how's it taken 7 years to get to that
it's just
situation? 11,000 in the Metropolitano.
And then it was a bizarre game in which Getafe lost by 2-0. There were 3 red cards, only 2 of which were for players on the pitch. So Letazza got sent off a tiny bit harsh, two really clumsy jumps into people, wasn't it, with his arm flailing. All right, don't do the second one if you've had the first one.
That's the only thing I would say. And he is an aggressive, big lump up front.
Yeah.
Big lump, I mean, a big traditional centre forward that puts himself about. I'm not calling him his ability. Yeah. He's a big old lump up front. But that's his job. That's his role. So you've got to be careful on the second one. He didn't thrust it into the defender's face. Players are aware that if you're that type of centre forward, if they go down holding their head, it's going to be, there was no real damage done. So that was a little bit reckless on his part. From a young player who wants to be aggressive, wants to be enthusiastic, got it wrong.
So what do you make of the Greenwood one? I have to say, I'm conflicted on this. What's your thought? So you got sent off for swearing at the referee in English, apparently. So,
I think the referee and referees in general could handle this. I know there was a school of thought that players shouldn't abuse the referees. What Mason Greenwood has got to get used to now is, because of his recent form, when you're playing Getafe, you're as an opponent, the coach, the players, they know he's the man to stop. So he's going to come under a little bit more intense pressure than he has done in the first part of the season. Because if you're playing Getafe, let's be honest, they haven't got a load of players where you can think, we've got to stop him.
Yeah.
Mayoral would be a good example, and maybe Greenwood, if we can stop Greenwood. Now, Enizuno's back, that's a help. But Greenwood is the one that is making things happen at the moment. So Rio, when he got the ball, two or three of them at a time were closing him down, which is within the laws of the game. It's to be aggressive.
It wasn't a terrible tackle that he
It was the accumulation of fouls, though. And even in that little one, there was two or three little chips at him before the referee gave the foul.
Exactly what Getafe do to people, but, you know.
And I think when Greenwood turned around, he didn't run in, my opinion, didn't run into the referee's face. He was aggrieved that probably the foul wasn't given a few seconds earlier. And he was aggrieved that it had happened two or three times before.
Yeah.
And he sort of went for the gesture of the yellow card, counted four, didn't he? As if to say, that's four fouls on me and you haven't done anything. And did he say, for fuck's sake, excuse my language on the podcast, I don't normally swear on a regular basis. That's the dilemma. If he'd gone over to the referee in time to F off and was right in his face, yes. I was amazed it was a straight red.
Yeah, because then you wonder, has he said something in Spanish? He's got very limited Spanish, but he's learning. And you know, football clubs are like,
swear words are the first thing.
Words will be So, and then the danger is that you use them wrongly. And when I remember speaking to players, I'm not going to say this word, in England, who use the C word, who are thinking, no, that's a really, no, don't you, really that's, don't say that. That's a really strong word. But it wasn't that. But it's the other way around. So the referee has sent him off for the F word in English. So the referees, they all speak English, don't they? Because you referee international and European games in English. However, it is used reasonably casually in England and certainly in English football. Yeah. But that's where my dilemma comes in. I was watching a game the day in England, and it was a nothing challenge. It was over whether it was a corner or a goal kick. And the player who then turned round and effed the assistant referee was wrong. And he just, and I was like, it's not acceptable that it's so lightly taken.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it is. That it's just like the players just eff the referees all the time. And so I can see why Greenwood then getting sent off would be shocked, because he'd probably be thinking, well, I got in England.
I used to have referees swear back at me.
Yeah, yeah.
They used to swear back at us.
Yeah.
You know, if you criticise the referee, count this time the referee said, have you seen how you're playing today?
Yeah.
What was that effing pass?
And that was the industrial language, wasn't it? The working class industrial language. People swear, and it's not a big deal. No one gets disciplined. If you swear in a workplace, no one. You know, the right kind of workplace. At school, obviously, if a teacher swears, it's a different matter. And so that's the difference. That's why I've got this slight dilemma about it, because I think it's harsh on Greenwood, because it's not the standard to send people off for that. But probably
it happens every now and then in any league. It happens in the Premier League, and you go, why? That's something that happens in most games. As long as the swearing isn't directed...
Or
as a slur to you directly.
It's two things as a rule.
In the face of the
one would be the C word, and one would be cheat, would be the two things that referees would get a straight red out for. F word, it would have to be right. It'd have to be properly aggressive in their face.
And a slur directed at you. So it was, I just feel that the referee completely destroyed this game of football.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even to the third sending off with Damian Suarez, they're 2-0 down. He's taking his time going off. He's trying to buy a little bit of time because his team don't want to get hammered. And the referee books him as he goes off. Then when he has a little argument with the fourth official about why, he then got another yellow and got sent off.
Yeah.
You're not time wasting to gain a massive advantage when you're 2-0 down and you're down to 9 men. So again, those two incidents, I think the referee could have dealt with better in that situation to either keep, I'm not saying keep players on because we want to see 11v11. If a player deserves to be sent off for a tackle or really offensive behaviour towards an official, they've got to go, irrespective of the match. But I think the referee in this situation could have dealt with that better So Getafe got a problem. I think it's Real Madrid, their next game, and they've ended up with no Greenwood, no Latessa, no Damien Suarez.
Yes.
So the consequence of the referee being able to knock a over enthusiasm after the Christmas break, as you say, got a new present with a couple of cards in it and a new whistle. I don't think it was refereed well at all. And a good example of how a referee can spoil a match. Rayo needed to win.
Real Sociedad 1, Alaves 1. Very obvious red card in this one. I'm not blaming
No complaints about this one.
Referee from this one. It's weird bit of goalkeeping, wasn't it? Alex Ramiro.
Why did he totally
misjudges the ball, doesn't he? And then
misjudges the decision to
to
blatantly put his hand up.
36 minutes, and he runs out the penalty area, bounces over his head, and he basically catches it. And
exactly.
So he has to get it.
We nearly got another meltdown from Luis Garcia Plaza when a penalty was awarded in the 90, God knows what minute of the game it was. But it was overturned by VAR correctly. It was ridiculous that it was actually given. Thankfully, in this situation, VAR was a benefit. It was never a foul. And Luis Garcia was on the verge of it, wasn't he? He was on his knees, threw himself on the ground, like the kid, the sport petulance that we saw in the previous game against Real Madrid, but it was turned over. But Zubimendi then got the late equaliser to get a point for La Real. A point isn't enough, though. And I know they were down for two-thirds of the game, down to 10 men, but I did expect more from Real Sociedad. And I think, you know, it's 32 points. It leaves them 6 points adrift of Athletic Club, of Atletico Madrid. It's not insurmountable. They can get that back, but it's not in the position they hoped they would be at this stage of the season. So points dropped, even with a 10-men issue. And a change of goalkeeper. I've forgotten the name of the goalkeeper that come on. Talk about take your time, mate. It was really annoying me. I know silly little things like that shouldn't annoy you. But he was taping his pads up and taping his socks up, taping his gloves up and getting the shirt and everything. I was thinking, just start the game, ref.
The goalkeepers are special, aren't they? Can't start without them.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking he's taking liberties now. There's probably about 10 minutes for him to get dressed.
Yeah.
And everyone else is standing around. I'm thinking, they're obviously going to have to make a substitution.
Yeah.
Like any other substitution, if he's not ready, play on. That would liven them
up. On the subject of wasting time, Celta Vigo 2, Betis 1. Good result. We'll get to that in a second. The VAR check to disallow a goal, 6.5 minutes, 6.5 minutes. And it was no goal. And at the end of the 6.5 minutes, they still gave it as no goal, but they changed the reason for it being no goal. Okay. it was extraordinary. It's because I think he gave it for offside. And then in the end, they changed it to being a foul. And and we just sat and watched that. We just sat and just watched replays for 6.5 minutes while they just decided why they were disallowing this goal that they were disallowing. Anyway, a good result for Celta Vigo.
Much needed.
Dramatic at the end as well, wasn't it?
Yep. I mean, 96 minutes. Betis have still got this problem. They go 1-0 up, Rebell, but they barely threatened to score again after that. And Celta Vigo, I think, are in a false position in the league table at the moment. I do expect them to improve. Their form over the first part of the season have been decent. They've been unlucky on controversial decisions that have gone against them. They've conceded late goals and missed penalties. But in this game against Betis, I think they showed their true potential. Not suggesting they're going to climb massively up the table, but I think they've got too much to be relegated. And Viljot Svedberg came on as a sub, scored the goal, keeps creating a good impression when he comes off the bench as well. Hopefully he might get some more playing time. Aspas with the penalty. But Betis, 21 goals in 19 matches.
Yeah.
And I don't see any sign of that improving. And I see that it's going to be a long-term problem for the rest of the season unless they can do something in the transfer market in this month.
Also,
I don't see it happening.
The worst bit of defending I've seen from Sokratis on that goal, the Svedberg goal, where he manages, for some reason, he's outnumbered, isn't he? But some reason he runs back into his own half, plays everyone onside, and then steps up. So he's like, wave him through. On you go, mate, on you go. Good result for Rafa Benitez. Really good result for Valencia. 3-1. Two penalties, wasn't it? There was that really harsh one, and then a handball one, and then Yaremchuk got a goal as well. So
Yeah.
good news for Valencia.
It's a derby as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Valencia, they're ticking along nicely. Ninth now, 26 points, as compared to Villarreal, 19 points, down in 13th place, hovering above the relegation issues. This is the, you know, you expect the other these two teams to be the other way around. We're Villarreal, ninth position. But Valencia, they're fine. Young players are good. It slightly flatters them, I think, the scoreline. I think the first half, they were really good. Two penalties amongst them. So it was, but you know, Marcelino's got some issues. Eric Bailly, one of the quickest signings, came on early for Albiol and picked up an injury. So Eric Bailly back at the club. They're not firing on all cylinders yet, Vero.
Yeah.
Certainly not away from home and in this game. Valencia deserved the win, but I think the 3-1 just slightly flattered them a little bit.
And we'll do another couple quickly, if that's all right, Terry, and then we'll
pleasure.
Pick them up the last time. So Granada 2, Cadiz 0.
Yeah, significant win, this. I mean, Granada got a new manager recently, Alexander Medina from Vélez Sarsfield, Uruguayan. But he hasn't worked since February, last February. So that's a long... I'd be interested in to see how his name came up and how he was proposed as the manager. But I think they've got a chance, Bernardo. I really do. It's only their second win of the season. Azuni and Zaragoza with the goals. They deserve the win. I've been keeping a check on Cadiz in the press since. Because I must admit, I expected Sergio to get the sack after this game. I think Cadiz are really underperforming this year. Too many good attacking players not to have done far better than what they're doing. In the past, I've expected them to go down. This season, I expected them to finish mid-table. As the season has progressed, I've tipped them for relegation. They just don't score enough goals. They're not creative enough. And whilst I don't wish to see any manager get the sack, I've been keeping an eye because I expected it, but he's got the vote of confidence. And the reason I said I expected it, they're underperforming. It's a transfer window. There is a little break in the season. But it looks like Sergio, so he's got to initiate some more creative attacking play, be a little bit more courageous with his team style in order for them to win games, because they were outplayed in this game against Granada.
And
I mean, Ruben Sobrino gets sent off 54 minutes, but they were 1-0 down then, and it's it was already a lost cause, to be honest.
Yeah. Osasuna 1, Almeria 0. Also, for Almeria, can't get a...
Possibly the worst game of the... midweek round the fixtures. Osasuna were really good first half. Should have been about 3-0 up. They weren't. It was 1-0. And in the second half, they were just as bad as Almeria, who had four shots and none on target. Almeria desperately needs some reinforcements up front. Not a lot to say about the game. It was the least enjoyable match I watched out the template this week.
One little tip for everyone who's still listening, from Darren, as he points out, great way to start the year with the ineptitude of the Spanish Federation. No one's showing the Copa del Rey or the Super Copa over the next week or so as we speak. He thought TNT might get it, but not looking likely. He says you should have a word with ITV, Terry, and save them having to show another repeat of Jaws. However, here's the tip: RTVE. In Spain, he's putting the games, the Real Madrid game and Malaga versus Real Sociedad on their website for free. So, but you'd need a Spanish pointed VPN to get those. So RTVE.
It is a shame, and we could do a whole podcast in why, you know, what we would like to see with La Liga and Spanish football in the UK.
Yeah.
It's got some work to do from when you compare it back to the time. I mean, I was watching Viaplay last night. In between the games, where it could have gone back to the studio, they were
it was
showing
weird,
ice hockey,
wasn't it?
And
yeah.
I was having to check.
Not,
the right
not even
channel.
Live ice hockey or anything. It wasn't like no. There was a game going on. There was random bits
and there
of
was
ice hockey appeared.
One of the advert breaks had a whole thing on Serie A.
Yeah.
And I had to check.
To the, point
game
where
on
Barcelona,
this...
I'm thinking, am I missing this? Am I in the wrong game here or something? I was starting
when's
to think.
Kick-off?
Yeah. And they were actually commentators halfway through the teams when they cut to them. Anyway, there we are.
But it is something for us to we could do, you know, how we would see it improving, you know, getting eyes on La Liga.
Yeah.
In the UK, Jude Bellingham should be something we're seeing on a regular basis, hence the reason ITV were keen to show the Real Madrid Mallorca game. What he's achieving and what he's doing needs to be seen more. Playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world and ripping it up and having a great season, but, you know, not enough people have seen it at the moment. And it is an issue for Spain, La Liga, to be concerned about. And likewise, that no one's rushing to get the Super Cup, which we you know, that could be another podcast, couldn't it? Me and you on the benefit of having the Super Cup, cancelling the in Saudi Arabia, cancelling a round of La Liga fixtures. That I'm not in love with that idea. And the Copa del Rey, it's not unusual for it not to be on in the early stages in the UK. Later on, it does get shown sometimes, but you know, there's work to be done on promoting La Liga in the UK, I think.
Right, we will leave it there. So, Copa del Rey this weekend. We'll be back. We'll do something with Patreons next week, exclusively for our Patreons, because they pay us money, basically. That's the deal. So, we'll be back for that. Thank you for listening, everybody, and enjoy your football this weekend, and we'll see you soon.